Okay, Karen, I've got it on recording now. Are you unmuted?
How's that?
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, then I think we're ready to get started.
So okay.
We'd like to welcome everybody this evening. Thanks for listening in to tonight's teleseminar with Karen Scholl. I'm your host, Melinda Garish, and my husband and I own Cutting Up Stables here in Shirley, Indiana. And so if you're ever in our area, please stop on by. We'd love to have you stay with us. So, Karen, you ready to get started?
Yes, anytime.
Okay. Karen, there are so many of us that are having fun with this seminar, and as I'm going through all the questions and the comments that we're receiving, it seems like this hour is really being well spent, and I think we could probably spend more time even. So, but we've got several topics here that we're going to be discussing, and I'll kind of go through them, and then we'll come back and hit the questions. But this evening, we're going to be talking about maintaining leadership from the ground to the saddle. And then we're going to come back with two eyes, not two heels. And then we're going to talk about two VDDs, particularly the long lining with the surcingles. And then I'm sure you've heard of this, Karen, and it's slow and right beats fast and wrong, that fast and right beats slow and right. And so you're going to get to talk about that a little bit more. And keeping the feet moving and the mayor versus a gilding. And then we're going to talk about some clinic locations. So if you're ready to get started, our first question is from Stephanie. And this is her question. I have great leadership with my mare on the ground. She does anything I ask of her. However, when I get on her back, I lack the same leadership. How do I ensure her that I mean the same thing when I'm on the ground that I do in the saddle?
Well, that's a really good question. And how I like to think of it is that you want to know you're making a transition. That's the question that you're really asking right there. So if you think of what you're asking from the horse on the ground, how do you replicate it up on the horse's back? One of the common things that I see people do is using two different types of pressure. Oftentimes on the ground, people are using rhythmic pressure rather than steady pressure, which is actually touching the horse. When we get on the horse's back, we're using steady pressure with our seat and our legs and our reins and the bit or halter. So it's actually touching the horse, but now you're introducing that to the horse up on the back kind of for the first time. Now, being a prey animal by nature, a prey animal pushes into steady pressure versus moving away from rhythmic pressure. So something that you may want to try, Stephanie, is that have an awareness of when you're on the ground, make sure that you're touching the horse to move it, not using a stick or a rope or your hands and waving rhythmic pressure at them. That's actually a pressure that horses are very familiar with because that's what horses use with each other. So make sure that what you're doing on the ground is actually as similar as possible to what you're going to be doing up on the horse's back. That's probably the main thing. And then have a willingness to bite the horse from up on the horse's back. Sometimes, you know, when we're on the ground, we have more willingness to demonstrate leadership on the ground because we're not up on the back of this 1,200-pound animal. But remember, it's not a whack or something sudden or abrupt. It's rhythmic pressure that starts very lightly, supporting your steady pressure, eventually moving into a bite. And remember, if you're willing to bite the horse, give him a little mama's bite, then you won't have to. So everything that you do on the ground, if you've got it, you know, 80% on the ground, it's going to be about 50% when you get up on the horse's back. So it's natural to have things to be better on the ground than on the horse's back. But those are some things, common areas where I see people just in that little bit of difference, not realizing that it seems like a little bit of difference to us, but it's a big difference to the horse. So hopefully that'll help you.
Okay. And Karen, as you're talking, I'm kind of trying to picture what you're saying. And so I'm picturing your mama's bite on the ground because I've seen you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of describe that maybe, you know, on the back? What kind of bite, what are you going to see, that, or what kind of maneuver are you going to be doing, I guess, with that?
Well, say you're up on the horse's back and you want to disengage the hindquarters. Let's start on the ground. this will be a good illustration, then you can apply it wherever you want. You're on the ground, and you want the horse to hold the front feet still, but move the hindquarters around in a circle. So you can take the stirrup of your saddle, take your rein or your lead rope, and shorten it up so you can tip the horse's eye toward you. You don't want to fold them in half, but definitely tip the nose towards you. So if the horse responds to the pressure around the hip, you can tip the nose towards you and get the hip away from you if you get in an emergency situation. So don't just walk up and take the stirrup and stick it in their belly. You might get surprised at the reaction. But if you walk up, take the stirrup in your hand, shorten that rein to tip the eye towards you, rub the horse with the stirrup first, and then very, very lightly press the edge of the stirrup into their side, gradually getting firmer until the horse moves away from it. Now, if the horse gets stuck and just sits there and pushes or pushes into it, then you can add your other hand very lightly, like you're just tapping very lightly, gradually getting firmer, putting rhythmic pressure to support your steady pressure. Don't let go of the stirrup. Just add the rhythmic pressure, and the instant the horse moves away from it, release and rub with the stirrup again. So think about doing that same thing from up on the horse's back. You're going to take the rein, tip the horse's eye towards you, tip the nose around, put your leg on, and it's going to be the same thing. You're going to touch very light, gradually getting firmer. If the horse gets stuck in that little spot right there, then you're going to add rhythmic pressure to support that steady pressure. So you can use your hand or the end of your rein or lead rope and just add just very light rhythmic pressure, gradually getting firmer till there's a little bite, a little nip. The instant the horse moves away from your steady pressure, your leg in this case, you release and rub. And then do it again. Do it again until you don't need the rhythmic pressure to support the steady pressure. Does that give you a better picture there, Melinda?
Yeah, it does. And I know you're real good at getting those pictures out there for us. So I just thought let's take that a little bit further and try to help that out. So that's good.
Great.
Okay.
Good.
All right. So, well, that was a pretty short question-answer thing. So we're going to move along a little tonight. So you ready for the next one?
I'm talking fast because we got a lot to cover.
I guess so. Okay. This one's from Joanne. The question's a little bit longer here, but this is with the two eyes, not two heels philosophy. And she recently attended a Clinton Anderson clinic out in Colorado, but was only able to go for a one day to watch. He demonstrates a very similar theory to yours, and I thoroughly enjoyed his technique as I do yours. One thing he showed us was when the horse is on the lead line and halter and you disengage the hindquarters, they should move their back end out of the circle and bring their eyes to you, the two eyes, not two heels, as he calls it. I learned this with you at your three-day clinic last July, but when my horse is off the halter and lead line and loose in the round pin and I ask him to disengage his hindquarters to change direction, he automatically turns toward the fence, showing me his heels instead of bringing his eyes and body to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it says, last weekend I worked with him on the lead line, and he turned in towards me as I required, and he would stop and change the direction as asked. But when I turned him loose in the round pen, he immediately afterwards, he would either stop and just look at me without moving his body towards me or turn away from me to change directions. I worked him in the round pen quite a bit since, and she's owned him for 5 years and pretty much conditioned him to turn away from me when changing directions, or at least that's what he's always done. And I've never corrected him for that. And right now she's trying to decide, but as I was trying to get him to turn towards me, he just looked at me in puzzlement. I don't want to confuse him. If I'm doing something wrong, here comes the question. How do
okay.
I get him to turn in towards me and want to be with me in the center or change directions rather than turn away from me, in particular for doing rollbacks offline?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the answer to the question is ultimately your horse, because I like to, and I like how she phrased the question, and this isn't in contradiction to it at all. I just want to add to it, because sometimes people get rules, and they say, well, the horse should always turn towards you, or always turn away from you, or always, you know, stop perpendicular, you know, to you, fill in the blank. The answer is you should be able to communicate any of those things by your body position to the horse. So I like to say that because when people long line horses say in English, they want the horse to stop sideways to them without turning towards them or turning away. So I like to mention that here because there's, as everybody knows with horses, there are more rules than, you know, summertime flies with the horses. But so if you want to think about this, Joanne, think about how do I position this myself to the horse? And one of the reasons horses get in a pattern of turning away, especially in changing direction, and I see it all the time, is that our tendency when we want to change a direction is we put pressure. The horse is going forward, and now we throw pressure kind of towards the nose, and usually pretty close to it. So that causes the horse to turn away and have a tendency to turn away, do a change of direction with the nose to the outside. And if that's what I wanted, that's exactly how I would do it. I would position kind of towards the nose, put the pressure towards the nose, tip it away, the horse would go off, and I'd take the pressure away. So you want to change the pattern, and you have a good idea of going back online with it. But what you want to start doing is creating a communication to the horse to come towards you, to come into you and come towards you, maybe even at a trot. Now, one of the things I'm going to mention, because there's a lot of different experience levels of people listening, don't go offline too soon. Liberty is an advanced study. Okay, so the steps to make the transition from online to Liberty are very specific because you're going to go back to ingredients and actually get your ingredients even better. So when I ask a horse to do a change of direction, I actually don't look at the hip. I actually get a different posture. I call it the come hither posture. And I actually kind of go with the motion of the horse and back up, spiraling out until the horse, I do it to my best ability so I don't put enough pressure that the horse stops or turns away from me. I want to just keep a position to where that horse finally says, well, what are you doing, and starts looking at me. Now, I'm doing this online first. Okay, so it's a different posture than pressure to turn away or pressure at the hip. And I see a lot of people do that because you can put pressure towards the hip and the horse starts walking towards you. A horse can learn that pattern, but it gets in the way when you want to start doing change of direction. Because now you're hunkered over, looking at the hip, disengaging the hindquarters, the horse starts walking towards you, and you have to completely change your physiology and your communication to send them the other way. So, number one, go back online. 12-foot line's ideal. And before I even have the horse go out in the circle, I teach the horse by holding about halfway down that lead line, and I go backwards, allowing the rope to slide and then gradually increasing the pressure with my hand so I don't get to the end of the 12-foot. And then I use my stick and string, the extension of my arm, to spank behind the drive line. And if you're not familiar with the drive line, please get the videos and look where that drive line is, because the angle of the drive line comes out off the shoulder at a 45-degree angle. So if I spank the ground directly 90 degrees straight out from my body, I'm actually spanking behind the drive line. The way that position is, it seems like you're spanking, you're putting pressure in front of them. But when I put pressure on that lead rope again, that's my steady pressure, then I use my stick and my string to have rhythmic pressure behind the drive line. That causes the horse to move forwards and come trotting to me. So I can start conditioning that communication. When I get the come hither look, man, you ought to peel off that wall and come running into me. When you get that, and you get it online really, really good, try it offline and just go really slow. If the horse makes 14 rounds around the round pen, that's okay. The idea is you want them to keep going forwards and turning towards you, even if it's just a little bit. You know, stop, give them a rub, let them come to you, and then you're going to build on that. So it's kind of a simple question, but that's a whole video, you know, to explain kind of those processes right there. And we actually have that videotaped. We shot that this last summer up in Colorado, and it's just about ready for production to show that transition from online on the ground to Liberty, and specifically that come towards you and then change a direction. So I don't know how to tell you every single thing about that except go back online, develop a new communication to come towards you. Make sure you're not putting so much pressure at the nose. Don't worry about the change of direction. Get the position first. and get the horse coming toward you. When the horse gets good at coming toward you, he'll change eyes with you. And when you see the other eye, then you take the pressure away, you know, bring the stick up on the other side without too much pressure to cause him to get confused, and then you just very gracefully send him in the other direction.
Okay. And this kind of leads us got that. And this
okay.
right into our
just,
next question.
Yeah, just do that.
About,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, what? This is going to talk about the DVDs, and this so this just kind of leads
clinic.
Us right that's, right
that's
into
an after
it.
That question right there is a whole afternoon in a clinic.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? So, and then we'll have to talk about how to create a clinic so they can get out there and see that hands
sure.
on. So,
sure.
Okay. Well, this one comes in from Kyra, and it does talk about your DVDs. And she says, Karen, I bought your DVD pack and halter, lead rope, and crop, and talked to you for a while at the Equine Affair in Springfield, Massachusetts. Your DVDs have helped me tremendously so far, especially with trusting my animal and giving me the confidence I so need. I'm hoping you may have a DVD or a book online on lining with the Sursingle. He's almost ready to be trained for riding, but he is Friesian, and the vet recommends he is to wait until he's 3.5, which is hopefully soon. So she wants to know what you think about long lining in the meantime, and hopefully will you have a CD or a DVD if you don't have, or a book out there soon on doing that. So kind of talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Again, that's an advanced topic,
okay.
But what you're doing online with a single line is pretty much the same. What I do suggest to people is when things are good on a 12-foot line, go to a longer distance as soon as you can. Go to a 22-foot line as soon as you can. Smaller diameter circles are harder on the physiology of the horse. Okay, it puts more torque on the legs, you know, things like that. So don't stay on a 12-foot line too long, especially a big horse like a Friesian. They need more forward movement than small, tight circles. So go to a 22-foot line. And then get the horse used to, I'm trying to think which video it's on, putting the rope down around the hindquarters and having the horse yield to the steady pressure of that rope. Kind of put the rope to the offside and have that horse kind of yield to that on both sides. And then it's really simple to take a second 22-foot line, attaching it to the halter, but stay to the side of the horse. You know, put the offside line up over the back and let the long lines drag behind you. Make sure that is not flat lunge tape. I do not, even cotton lunge lines, I do not care for. If it's flat, it's got a bite to it. So make sure it's a round yachting braid. 22-foot ring rope that I have on my website is ideal for it. But if you take that and attach two lines, start with it up over the horse's back, and start using, you know, your steady pressure of leading your line and then rhythmic pressure of your supporting line. And as the horse gains confidence, you can move back further and further as he gets more confident moving out in front of you. And then it kind of becomes no big deal to put the rope down around the hindquarters as you drop back by the hip. You don't need to go straight behind the horse. You can drive them from the side at first. But the riding from the ground is that transition to do that. In the riding from the ground video, you're using a halter and lead, and then you have a stick that's supporting it. So just think of replacing that stick with an offside line. And you're going down the road. Now, Sursingles can keep the lines up off the ground, but I prefer to have people not use Sursingles because then you have to have just the right amount of feel on your rope to be able to keep your lead lines up off the ground. So also Sursingles will put sometimes your reins in the wrong position, and it becomes kind of a pivot point. So I like the lead lines. If you look at the Inspiration with Horses videos, you see that I have 22-foot lines tied around two different horses, and I'm driving them in a pair in front of me from behind on the ground. So there's lots of ways to do it, but that's where I'd make that transition, because what your vet's describing is teaching that horse to follow steady pressure of giving that horse direction, you know, turning left and right, going forwards, going backwards, all those things, and you're just communicating from a different position, which is behind. So absolutely, anything you can do with a horse in advance of you know, writing them just makes them much, much better prepared for the communication when the person gets up on their back.
Okay. Okay, and this kind of leads us into, you know, when you're saying going from hurry up and get from the 12-foot to the 22-foot rope, then this kind of leads us into the next question, because if anyone's had the opportunity to be at Karen's clinic, you probably have heard her say several times, slow and right beats fast and wrong, but fast and right beats slow and right. And that kind of reminds me of that, as well as this next question. And are you ready for it?
Sure.
Okay. It's from Wendy. And she says, thank you so much for doing these teleconferences. Great idea and very helpful. I've always struggled with how to know when a horse has truly understood the basic exercise and therefore I can move up into asking quicker, etc. I know I put my mare through reward the slightest try. I'm now working with an Arab gelding who is very smart. However, if I move too fast, he seems to revert into instinctive escape mode. I know he is capable of understanding the work, but I'm not able to distinguish when I should be asking more to keep him interested and challenged versus asking too much too soon and putting him in the panic mode. What signs do I look for that let me know he has understood the basic work and is ready to move on?
Well, that's a really good question, because what I like to come back to is how do I replicate another horse's behavior, and not just any horse in the herd, but the lead horse. So what I like to do is ask myself this question. If you took that Arabian and put him out in the pasture with a herd of horses, how would they interact with him? They wouldn't go, oh, he's going into a flight mode and we better back off, or, oh, he's a right brain something, or oh, he's a this, he's that. They would simply act like a horse. And where horses get confused with too much pressure, sometimes when we back off, and I know this comes up in the different teleseminars, when a horse gets scared and we back off, we actually reinforce a fear behavior. And I have seen that taken to extremes with horses. It seems like that's what we should do. But if you're confident in your position and your skills, I get horses every single weekend that they are jumping around like, you know, monkeys out there freaking out, and I just keep doing what I'm doing, and they all of a sudden they start looking at me and go, you know, well, why aren't you quitting? I'm freaking out. I'm very fragile. I'm an Arabian, you know. And I go, yeah, whatever. You know, I'm just acting like a horse. So it's really an amazing thing if you, you know, study these principles of, you know, a posture, pressure, a wave of warning, and then a mama's bite. I can have an Arabian horse in my hands. I can have a big, dull draft horse. I can have a kid's horse. I can have a miniature. But what you see me do is simply communicate to every one of those horses the way another horse would. So I get this question very commonly, and I like to answer it this way because I want people to learn to trust their gut instinct to say, you know what, this is simply a fear behavior, but I feel pretty confident that I'm being communicative here, and I'm going to simply set it up. You only need to use enough pressure to cause the horse to search for the answer. So maybe practice modulating your intensity a little bit. You know, some horses, it's like kids. Some kids, you just got to look at them, and man, they shape up. But other kids, they go, yeah, right, you and what army? So you may have to modulate your intensity, but all you're doing is putting on enough pressure to cause the horse to seek a new behavior. So here's another way to look at it that'll help the timing of your release. You're gonna gradually increase the pressure until the horse starts searching for the answer. Then you're going to apply that term, set it up and wait. So now you're just going to wait, and the horse is going to be seeking the answer. Is it freak out? Is it run backwards? Is it go left? Is it go right? And you simply hold that amount of pressure until the horse even thinks about doing what you want, and you release immediately, even if it's just a shift in their weight. So here's the last piece to think about. You're going to release the pressure when you see a behavior that you would like to see again. And that little comment right there really helps people get that it's the release that teaches and helps improve the timing of the release. So, for example, if you take the Arabian horse and you say, okay, I'm going to practice the technique killing ants. I'm going to take a stick and a string and I'm going to just kill ants and kill ants and kill ants and say he just starts jumping around like a marlin. Well, I just keep bumping his nose back to center. I'm going to do my best to continuously kill the ants on the ground. He may be running kind of half wild around me. I'm just going to keep his nose, bump it to me. I'm not going to get in a dragging contest because I'll bet you he'll win. But I'm going to keep bumping his nose back to me. The moment he kind of stops and looks at me and says, what? I'm going to stop killing ants. Then I'm going to start again. But I'm not going to be soft and gentle, or he'll train me to always be soft and gentle around him. So if he's going to be scared, I want him to be scared, and then I'm just going to wait as best I can until he does a behavior that I want to see again. In this case, stop running, you know, I don't have a drag on the line, just stop and look and stand still, and I'm going to quit again. So I hope that that kind of explains that step right there, especially in a horse that's a scared horse, because, again, you're using the same principles, whether it's a scared horse or a quiet horse or an abused horse or, you know, gated horse, whatever, you know, fill in the blank. So it's that same application of what's on the Cornerstone for Communication. And on the Cornerstone for Communication, there is an Arabian on it, a young horse, and a thoroughbred. So you see a lot of variations just in those different characteristics of horses. But what you'll see when you watch that is my approach remains consistent because I'm simply emulating the lead horse's behavior. Okay?
Okay. Very good. So you kind of take a deep breath. So I know this past weekend Mike was helping somebody with some cutting. We had the cows out, and you know he's kind of telling them what to do, and then it was kind of like, are you listening? Are you listening? He's like, well, I'm actually just kind of absorbing what you're trying to tell me. So I feel like sometimes if we're going from question to question, we're like giving them a second to go, okay, and soak all that in real quick.
Well, horses need that too. It's called dwell time.
Yeah, yeah.
Need a little bit of dwell time.
Just think about that. So,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, this next question is from a Karen, and her question is, I have a 2-year-old Mustang I've been working with for about a year now. He's doing quite well with the groundwork we've done so far. One issue I have is keeping him going when he's circling around me on the 12-foot line. If I'm using just the stick and a string, it is difficult getting him started, and he will frequently stop in his tracks once out on the circle. I'll restart him, and we will repeat this process many times. He will do it. He's just not too motivated to move. However, if I use a stick with a small plastic bag on it, we have much more success. And I'm also trying to desensitize him to the plastic bag when doing other groundwork, and we're not quite there yet, she said. Is there any other way I can get more motivation out of him to move him when he's out on the circle and not use the bag? Or am I just confusing him with my methods? Any suggestions would be welcome.
Okay. This is a really great question because a plastic bag on the end of a stick, and depending on, you know, where he was brought in, oftentimes that tool right there is what's used. Sorry, I have a helicopter going overhead here. The helicopters come to pick me up, you know.
Send them your way.
They're dropping me a rope ladder. Hang on a minute.
See, if I can't get out to Arizona, you're just going to fly into Indiana.
Yeah.
I've located you.
That's it. Me and Santa Claus, we're going to arrive in a helicopter. Well, the thing with the plastic bag, BLM Mustangs are driven in with sticks with plastic bags on them. It's a very common tool that that folks use. So what it tells me is that the horse, if it's not desensitized to the plastic bag, what you're getting is a reaction with fear. And so the horse is moving and staying going, but it's more from a fear element than a respect and understanding element. So I personally, I do not use a tool for pressure that my horse is not confident with, because you're losing trust. When you do that, the horse is moving, and we think, okay, well, I got it moving, but, sorry?
Oh, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
sorry,
okay.
I said something. But if the horse is moving, we think, okay, well, that worked, but the horse isn't moving in the right frame of mind. So I won't use a tool that the horse is afraid of, because it's undermining the trust that I'm trying to build, if that makes sense. So the response I'm looking for, one of my favorite sayings is, I'm looking for a response with respect, but without fear. And that means, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, how fast, how far, I would love to. So think about what you would need to do that. I wouldn't use the plastic bag if the horse is not confident with it. And I'd go back to the stick and the string. And again, make sure you're putting a gall darn feel on your lead rope. I'll bet you a cookie, because it's probably a 90% chance that you don't have a feel on your lead rope when you're asking the horse to circle. People get what I call the soggy rope syndrome, and it is absolutely epidemic. You know, people show up with a death grip on the clip, and then you get people to turn loose of the death grip, and you'll spend the rest of your life reaching down that lead rope and putting a feel. It's like putting your car in gear. Then, once you make sure you have a feel on that lead rope, then use your stick and string, using your posture, pressure, wave of warning, and then a mama's bite. And it needs to be, if that horse is facing you, that bite needs to be on the neck. If you go behind the shoulder at all with that pressure, that's telling the horse to turn and face you. Okay? So you may be able to get him going, and they go for a little while, but then he turns and faces you. And another common thing I see is people get flustered, and they go, oh no, he stopped and he's facing me. And then you just, you know, point with the lead rope. You didn't put a feel on it, so now it's soggy again. And then we try to go behind the drive line to make them go forwards, which actually moves the hindquarters away, and they turn and face us. It's one of the most common things I see clinic after clinic. And so if you just stand still, even every time your horse stops, and I'll stand there and exaggerate it. You know, the horse will stop. He'll go about, you know, halfway around. He'll stop behind me. I just go very slowly. I turn towards him, and people are going crazy. They're like, hurry up, he's wrong. I go, I don't care about that. What I care about is what you're doing. Pick up your lead line. Run your hand down that lead line and put a feel on that lead rope. Give the horse's nose the direction with the steady pressure. Then wave your stick and string, give a wave of warning, and then bite him on the neck, something that he doesn't want to feel again. And I've taken horses that are just kind of this exact description, and I'll tell you what, about 3 or 4 times that horse starts going, you know, my comfort is on the circle, and I think I want to stay out here, because stopping and turning and facing Karen is definitely not the answer.